I thought that was my tip. Okay, we're in chapter 7 of Daniel, and I think we got about 3 more lessons, which, if you do the math, means we're going to skip a few chapters. But this is about the vision of the four beasts, and I figured I'd start with a history lesson to kind of go through things to put it in perspective. You know, the first kingdom, Babylonian kingdom, lasted over 70 years, lasted 80-something years, right? Second kingdom. What was second kingdom? Mede-Persian. Right. Okay. So that lasted until about 331 BC. And notice the colors, gold, silver. The next one was the Grecian kingdom. It was a little bit different. You had Alexander the Great that conquered the known world in 13 years. That's fast. To march an army, because they walked everywhere they went, from Macedonia to India. And he conquered as he went his way. But about 31 years old, he died. And his four generals split up the kingdom. The ones you hear the most about are the Seleucid Empire and the Ptolemies, right? Okay, those are the ones you hear the most about. You don't hear too much about... How do you say that one that starts with an L, Kevin? I'd say Lysimachus and Cassander. You don't hear too much about them. What followed the Greek Empire? Roman. Okay? And the reason those arrows go down in that fourth kingdom is because they subsumed those pieces, piece by piece, into the Roman Empire as they conquered. They actually conquered out, going out west as well, but those particular parts of the kingdom. And the final one is during that fourth kingdom came the death, burial, and resurrection. So, if you look at the different kingdoms and where they were and how big they were, this is the Babylonian Empire. This is Babylon. These are the rivers, the Tigris, the Euphrates rivers that flow through there. And you can kind of see where it is. And Judah's right here. So, it's you can see where it's part of that empire. Extensive, but not as extensive as the Mede-Persian Empire. Remember, the Babylonian Empire was pretty much a horseshoe right here. But the Mede-Persian Empire had Babylon, it had Media, and it had Persia. It had three major elements, didn't it? Because it was Mede and Persia, it had two, and when it conquered Babylon, it took over all of its territories. So it had three pieces to it. Then you go to the Greek Empire. See how far east it went? All the way into India. It went the furthest east as far as conquering. And like I said, he started over here, and he ended up conquering all the way over here, and he did it in 13 years. And then he died. And after he died, they broke it up, where you had these two smaller ones, that Cassander and Lysimachus, or whatever, however you say his name, Lysimachus, are all over here. And a little bit to their west is Rome, and also the Gauls and everything else. So they're going to have to deal with those people because they're going to be invaded. But you've got the Seleucid Empire, and you've got the Ptolemy Empire. Ptolemy is down here. Seleucid down here. And a lot of the kings that were in the Seleucid Empire were named Antiochus. And that's why in this region here you've got so many Antiochs. It's because they're named after Seleucid kings. Judah's right here. These two empires, they didn't get along. So if they're going to go fight, where are they going to go fight at? They're going to trample over Judah back and forth, aren't they? As they fight. Now the Ptolemies, if you remember on that other chart, you probably don't. It wasn't until 30 AD before Egypt was subsumed by the Romans. Who's a very popular figure in the in Egypt culture that worked with the Romans? Cleopatra. Cleopatra. And then finally, the Roman Empire, around 100 AD is when I picked. And you can kind of see, it didn't get that far east at 100 AD, but it did conquer all these areas, and there's Judah right there in that area. But you can see where they took over all these particular areas, so that you've got the fourth kingdom. So that's a little bit of background to look at what we're talking about this morning. Huh? 70 years? 70 years. It was underneath Babylonian Empire. Yeah. The onset of the Medo-Persian Empire is what released the Jews. Matter of fact, it was Darius and Xerxes and Artaxerxes that sent money, resources, and everything like that with Ezra and Nehemiah to go back down and start to rebuild, and gave them the authority to go rebuild. Since you asked that about the Greeks, we know, we always look at the Persian Empire kind of favorably, Xerxes, but who did Xerxes fight against? Who's everybody knows the story of the Greeks that he fought against, right? You had Xerxes and everybody knows this story. The 300 Spartans, Leonidas, Thermopylae, that was against Xerxes. And I believe it was two rounds that they had with Xerxes. The first one was at Marathon, which is on the east coast of the Greek peninsula. And you know how far it is from Marathon back to Athens? Oh, come on. It's from Marathon. It's 26 miles. Okay, and when they beat the Greeks at Marathon, the Greeks got their ships rolled around and were going to attack Athens because the army was there. And a guy ran all the way from Marathon to Athens, and he said one word. Nike, which is victory in Greek. And then the army showed up the next day, and the Greeks saw the army was there, and they sailed back to Persia. That's for free. Okay. Getting into Daniel, since that perspective as far as a little bit of history and what's going on, we're in chapter 7, verses 1 and 2. In the first year of Belshazzar, king of Babylon, Daniel saw a dream and visions in his mind as he lay on his bed. Then he wrote the dream down and related the following summary of it. Daniel said, I was looking in my vision by night, and behold, the four winds of heaven were stirring up the great sea. I got that as a question up there. Good question. Under what kingdom, though, are we having this discussion? Last week was with Darius. He was Mede-Persian. What kingdom are we underneath right now? This is underneath the Babylonian king. So this is why Daniel's a little confusing. We've snapped back in time. To the first year of Belshazzar. Chapter 5 was the last year of Belshazzar when he got killed. So it's a little confusing because it's not chronological. Daniel is not chronological. It skips around. So here we're underneath the Babylonian kingdom. What is the Great Sea? What a great, great question. It's the Mediterranean. Okay. What's the reference to the four winds? North, south, east, west? What's going to stir the winds? What's it doing to the sea? Churn it up, okay. Reference is, you're going to have a lot of strife and conflict around the Mediterranean. And if you remember the four maps, What C was right in the middle of all that? The Med. Okay. Now, I put this all on here as one. I'm going to talk about it in pieces, but you have to look at the vision of the four beasts all together as one piece. And four great beasts was coming up from the sea, different from one another. The first was like a lion and had the wings of an eagle. I kept looking until its wings were plucked, and it was lifted up from the ground and made to stand on 2 feet like a man. A human mind was also given to it. And behold, another beast, resembling a bear. And it was raised up on one side, and 3 ribs were in its mouth between its teeth. And thus they said to it, "Arise, devour much meat." After this, I kept looking, and behold, another one, like a leopard, which had on its back 4 wings of a bird. The beast also had 4 heads, and dominion was given to it. After this, I kept looking in night visions, and behold, a fourth beast, a dreadful and terrifying and extremely strong, and it had large iron teeth. It devoured and crushed and trampled down the remainder with its feet, and it was different from all the beasts that were before it, and it had 10 horns. When I was contemplating the horns, behold, another horn, a little one, came up among them, and 3 of the first horns were pulled out by the roots before it. And behold, this horn possessed eyes like the eyes of a man and a mouth uttering great boasts. So those are the four beasts. And he sees this in a dream. And it's his dream, which is a little different. Every other time, whose dreams has it been? The king's. Whatever king was in at that time, but it was the king. So this is a little bit different. This is just a reminder from chapter 2, since we're talking about kingdoms. You had the head of gold, the torso of silver, the hips of bronze, the legs of iron, and the feet of iron and clay, and then the stone cut without hands. Remember that from chapter 2? And Daniel interpreted some of it. Not all of it, but some of it. He interpreted the head of gold, didn't he? He said, "King, that's you. You're that king of gold." And he kind of implied it on the next one with silver, and I made that kind of an orange because he didn't say what it was, but he said, "It's the kingdom that's going to follow you, but it's going to be lesser to you." We know that to be Mede-Persian, but it doesn't say that. The next one would be the Grecian kingdom. It doesn't say that. The next one we know is most likely the Roman kingdom. The interpretation was not given as to what it was, but he does say that stone is God's kingdom. So he kind of bookends it, but he doesn't fill in the details in between. But that's a kind of a reminder of what we talked about in chapter 2. So let me read this again. And 4 great beasts were coming up from the sea, different from one another. The first was like a lion and had the wings of an eagle. I kept looking until its wings were plucked, and it was lifted up from the ground and made to stand on 2 feet like a man. A human mind also was given to it. If you looked at beasts, we talked about the four beasts. Well, I read about the four beasts. We haven't talked about them yet. Which one would be the most royal or most regal? The lion. When you lionize somebody, what do? Yeah, he's king of the beasts. When you lionize, you say how great they are, how magnificent they are, right? That's lionizing someone. Richard the Lionhearted. You know, so you kind of look at that one as being the most regal of the four. What happened to Nebuchadnezzar somewhere in his reign? What did he do?
He had the mind of the beast.
Yeah. How did he get there? He was boasting. He walked out and he said, "Wow, look at all the things I did." And bam, God says, "Okay, I'm going to take it all away from you. I'm going to give you the mind of the beast." What else did he do to him? Did he make any physical changes? Ran around like a dog. He ate, what did he eat? He ate grass of the field. He had claws, okay? He had claws like talons, didn't he? And his hair, what did his hair look like? Feathers. Huh? It may have been matted, or it may have actually looked more like feathers. Don't know. You know, huh? Well, then it gets big, then it turns into big knots. It doesn't look like feathers. But if you look at this description that we had in chapter 4 or 5, I think it was in 4, it describes Nebuchadnezzar. When he said, I didn't do this, God did this, right? God was the one who put me in all this regal power into my dad. God stood him up, gave him back his mind, and gave him back his kingdom with more preeminence, more prominence than he had before he was struck down. So if you look at where it fits with the Babylonian kingdom. So which kingdom probably does a lion represent? Babylon, the Babylonian kingdom. So go to the next one. This one's harder. This one's harder. And I came up with an idea, and you guys let me know whether it's a good one or a bad one. And behold, another beast, a second one, resembling a bear. And it was raised up on one side, and three ribs were in its mouth between its teeth. And thus they said to it, arise, devour much meat. A bear with three ribs in its mouth. Oops. Okay. Let me go back one. The Asian bear or the Eurasian bear. They don't consider, have you ever heard, anybody been bear-ized? Lionized, yes, but not bear-ized. Okay. It's not normally considered as regal a beast. It's a powerful beast. When you look at what was there, the predators that were in the European and the Asian continent, they didn't have leopards in the European theater, but they did have them in the Asian theater. A bear is a little bit lesser than a lion, but he's above a leopard, isn't he? I mean, if there's a kill or something like that, where's the leopard going to go when a bear comes up or when the lion comes up? Up the tree. Matter of fact, when a leopard kills something, what does he do? He climbs a tree with it, hangs it in a tree. How many major portions of the Middle East comprised the Mede-Persian Empire? Major portions. Okay, it's three. What are they? Medo-Persian is probably a clue for two of them. Babylon, or the Babylonian peace, the Persian peace. What was Darius? He was not Persian. He was Cyrus's son-in-law. Media. We don't hear a lot about Media. Media is north of Persia. But that was the three pieces. This is what occurred to me about the three ribs. Those three pieces, those were major elements of the empire. And Darius stayed in the Babylonian kingdom's palace. Cyrus went back to the Persian Mede palace. But Darius stayed in the Babylonian kingdom's palace. What kingdom followed the Babylonian kingdom? Medo-Persian, okay. The reason I'm going through this is because there is only one interpretation of one of the beasts, and it doesn't give you any more information than you already knew. So this is conjecture based on history. Okay, let's go back. And I don't think I had any more questions.
On that one side, we're always trying to make it symbolic to the real thing. There on the side, does that give us direction?
It might. When you looked at The Mede-Persian Empire, where are they? Where did they attack from? They attacked from, they came from the east and came west. Yeah, they came one way. They did not come all the way around. Rome came from another way, but they chewed pieces off, whereas these were big changes. We went from the Babylonian Empire to the Mede-Persian Empire, and it was one really big change. When you went to the Grecian Empire, it was one really big change. When you went to the Roman, it was little pieces. Huh? Yep. Yep. And a bear is a powerful beast. Okay. Wasn't where the Babylonian Empire was, but it was a very powerful beast. And arise and devour. If you remember the map, the Mede-Persian Empire extended into Egypt, which was not part of the Babylonian Empire. Not the pieces that were there. And it went farther. It tried to go over into Greece. And that's where we got into the two conflicts that we talked about, with the conflict at Thermopylae and the conflict at Marathon. That was as this bear was going out and devouring parts of the world. Hard to say. But it just occurred to me yesterday that the three ribs, the three bones, the three major portions that the bear had that he started with, the Babylonian, the Mede, and the Persian. Okay. After this, I kept looking, and behold, another one, like a leopard, which had on its back four wings of a bird. The beast also had four heads, and dominion was given to it. Okay. Already gave the answer on that one. Leopard is lesser than the beast, than a bear and a lion. How quickly did Alexander the Great conquer the world? Huh? Real fast. A baker's dozen. That's a clue. 13. You know why the bakers call that a baker's dozen? They could be fined if they didn't give you 12 when you asked for 12. So to make sure they didn't give you 11 instead of 12, they gave you a baker's dozen. They gave you an extra one, so they couldn't be fined. Okay. Yes, 13 years. Who did he have help him with his conquest? Four generals. Seleucus, Cassander, Lysimachus, and Ptolemy. Four. Wings, what do wings indicate? Fast. Four heads. Four leaders. This beast was not just one-headed, it had four heads. What kingdom followed the Mede-Persian Empire? Grecian, that's easy. So, was it? I think it was. I've seen books that have had all kinds of stuff that have related what this is. The perspective I put on interpreting what the kingdoms are for me is the focus. The focus is when Christ came. What came after Christ established his kingdom, in my mind, is irrelevant. What led up to his kingdom being established is what's significant. And that's why I put it in the perspective I do. After this, I kept looking in the night visions, and behold, a fourth beast, dreadful and terrifying and extremely strong. And it had large iron teeth. It devoured and crushed, trampled down the remainder with its feet. It was different from all the beasts that were before it. It had 10 horns. While I was contemplating the horns, behold, another horn, a little one, came up among them. And three of the first horns were pulled out by the roots before it, And behold, this horn possessed eyes like the eyes of a man, and the mouth uttering great boasts. So he sees this fourth beast. What kind of beast is this? And a bear. You talk about the teeth, you talk about the feet, you talk about the horns. It's terrifying, yeah. But the simple answer is, we don't know. We don't know. How does Daniel relate this to the other three? It was different. He said, yeah, it was different. He didn't say how it was different. He just said it was different than all the other beasts. It was terrifying. To him, it was terrifying. Yeah. Well, he'd seen bears, he'd seen lions, he'd seen leopards, but he never saw whatever this was. Does it say how different? No. Everything, this is where you get the most conjecture as to what this is. Oops. Oh, come on. This thing is bouncing. Oh, that's good. See if I can just click on this again. This isn't too good. Do you know how to get this displayed? I hit the wrong button, I'm thinking.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. I don't know what mode it needs to be in.
Did you hit a button on here, you said?
Yeah. Let me try. It's up. It's just how you display that screen. I don't know what the trick is. There we go. Here you go. Thank you. I'm clicking. Was I? Okay. Moving along. Don't click that button anymore. Whatever button I click, don't click that one. Moving along, I kept looking until thrones were set up, and the Ancient of Days took his seat. His vesture was like white snow, and hair of his head like pure wool. His throne was ablaze with flames. His wheels were burning a burning fire. A river of fire was flowing and coming out from before him. Thousands upon thousands were attending him, and myriads upon myriads were standing before him. The court sat, and the books were opened. This is slow. That's what's driving me nuts. I click it, and then it just finally goes. Who's the Ancient of Days? God? Huh? Ancient of Days? God the Father. big guy, yeah. Where's this scene? In heaven. Heaven. Oh, come on. This thing is slow this morning for some reason. Or I'm not patient. Couldn't be that. So this is judgment. The books are opened. This ties it to Revelation. Yeah, you see this scene in Revelation. Then I kept looking because of the sound of the boastful words which the horn was speaking. So this is going on. He sees the beast, whatever this beast is, and he sees this scene in heaven at the same time. I kept looking until the beast was slain, and its body was destroyed and given to the burning fire. As for the rest of the beasts, their dominion was taken away, but an extension of life was granted to them for an appointed period of time. So he's seeing a battle, but you know who wins. What does this scene describe? It talks about, it's comparing two kingdoms, or two sets of kingdoms. It's comparing the heavenly kingdom to the temporal ones. What happens to all the kingdoms with the beasts? They go away. They're temporal. But the other kingdom exists forever. I kept looking in the night visions, and behold, with the clouds of heaven, one like the Son of Man was coming. And he came up to the Ancient of Days and was presented before him. And to him was given dominion, glory, and a kingdom, that all the peoples, nations, and men of every language might serve him. His dominion was an everlasting dominion, which will not pass away, and his kingdom is one which will not be destroyed. So, who's the Son of Man? Christ. So the Ancient of Days, the Father, is the one that presents the kingdom to the Son. What was he given? I can't hear you. All those things. Yep, dominion. Dominion, glory, and a kingdom. Sound familiar? He's given power. When he rose from the dead, glory, power, dominion, a kingdom. How is Christ's kingdom different than the other kingdoms? Everlasting. It's eternal. That's a whole class. There is a lot of different interpretations of what that is. It's in the Roman Empire, we believe. But you can find that situation. You could say it's Nero. You could say it was The first person who was raised up as the Pope in the Western realm. You can find a book and see and tag almost anybody to it. There are so many interpretations of who that is. Remember in chapter 2, the stone that's cut. What does that stone do to the statue? Smashes it into pieces. But the stone, and the stone's uncut with human hands, right? And it represents God's kingdom. It's everlasting. So you see that same contrast as you did in 2 as to the temporal nature of those kingdoms that were in the statue and the temporal nature of the beasts, the eternal nature of God's kingdom.
Yeah,
glory and the kingdom. You know, if we go and look at, I want to say it's 1 Corinthians 15, if I'm not mistaken, about the order of the resurrection and all. You know, it talks about how everything was placed into subjection under Christ. And he was placed there. He was seated at the right hand,
of God. Back to the Father.
So we see that connection there as well. Like, this was a dominion and a power and glory that was given to Christ, and that he was put into that position. So, you know, it's interesting to see that.
It's in Daniel. So they could understand what was going to happen. You even have the stoning of Stephen, where you looked up in heaven and he says, I see the Christ seated at the right hand of God. And he's over his kingdom. And that's when they just couldn't stand it anymore. And they really killed him.
We want to assume this happened about 2,000 years ago, but Christ is not back yet.
This
was established 2,000 years ago.
Yep, it was established then.
2,000 years ago, that makes
it fit in. It does fit in. But it's we're working from a perspective, looking back at what happened, as opposed to Daniel, when he wrote this. He wrote it, about 2,500 years ago, Daniel wrote this. Which temple?
Well, when the little guy, you know, talking about boastful, you know, I got the Roman sacrifice pigs on the altar.
They put up it was the Syrians who put up a statue to Zeus. I'm not sure what the Romans just raised it to the ground. 70 AD, they just raised everything to the ground. But again, it was to the Jews, and this was the persecution of the saints in the kingdom. So this would have been against Christians. It would not have been against specifically the Jews. As for me, Daniel, my spirit was distressed within me, and the visions in my mind kept alarming me. I approached one of those who was standing by and began asking him the exact meaning of all this. So he told me and made known to me the interpretation of these things, which he didn't write down, by the way. These great beasts, which are four in number, are four kings who will rise from the earth. But the saints, the highest one, will receive a kingdom and possess the kingdom forever for all ages to come. That's probably the short explanation. He didn't put down the detailed explanation. So who's Daniel most likely speaking to that gives him an interpretation? An angel. Probably an angel. What do the beasts represent? Kingdoms. Kings. Right? Four kings or four kingdoms. We're getting close. What are these four beasts in contrast to? The what?
Kingdom of God.
The saints that will possess one that lasts forever. Big contrast. And like I said, the focus of Daniel in a lot of this is focused at that kingdom that comes, as opposed to the temporal kingdoms. It has happened. The kingdom's established by Christ. We're not in heaven, but the kingdom's established. Then I decided to know the exact meaning of the fourth beast, which was different from all the others, exceedingly dreadful, with its teeth of iron and its claws of bronze, and which devoured, crushed, and trampled down the remainder with its feet. And the meaning of the 10 horns that were on its head, and the other horn which came up, and before the three of them fell, namely that horn which had eyes and a mouth uttering great boasts, and which was larger in appearance than its associates. I kept looking, and that horn was waging war with the saints and overpowering them, until the Ancient of Days came and judgment was passed in favor of the saints of the Highest One. And the time arrived when the saints took possession of the kingdom. So the only one that really bothers them is that fourth one, isn't it? And really don't get any, this explanation that's here doesn't really tell you a whole lot more about this fourth beast, does it? Yeah. He doesn't know what it, but he asked the angel, he said, tell me more about it. And he said, well, it's one that's going to do this, this, and this, which was, I kind of already knew that. Why do you think? Why do you think that one bothered him so much? Well, teeth of iron might be. Huh?
It sounds like a machine.
Could be.
No, I'm not saying it is.
Yeah.
To him,
when you looked at the other three beasts, did any of them make war with the saints? No. The fourth one did. The fourth one bothered him, I think, because that one made war with the saints. The other ones didn't. Thus he said, the fourth beast will be a fourth kingdom on the earth. So he told them it was a kingdom, kind of knew that, which will be different from all the other kingdoms and will devour the whole earth and tread it down and crush it. As for the ten horns, out of the kingdom, 10 kings will arise, and another will rise after them, and he will be different from the previous ones and subdue the three kings. He will speak out against the Most High and wear down the saints of the Highest One. And he will intend to make alterations in times and in law, and they will be given to him in his hand for a time, times, and half a time. And there's a lot of interpretation about this. Because people try and put a time frame onto the time, times, and time, and half a time. No. No. If the fourth kingdom has come and it has gone, his kingdom has been established. You can't apply that to the times now. You can't step out of the sequence. His kingdom is everywhere. We're part of his kingdom right now, Clayton. I'm in his kingdom right now. Well, you can see a lot of things on TV. But we're in his, we have to know that. We're in his kingdom right now. He established his kingdom, and we're the saints in his kingdom. Right now. Fourth beast, do we know? It's the fourth kingdom. That's about all we know. Is that a good explanation you got? The other explanations he got was much better. We're going to study about the goat and the sheep in another chapter. But this one, not too good. He didn't have much more out of this than he got from his dream. But the court will sit for judgment, and his dominion will be taken away, annihilated, and destroyed forever. Then sovereignty and the dominion and the greatness of all the kingdoms under the whole heaven will be given to the people of the saints of the Highest One. His kingdom will be an everlasting kingdom, and all the dominions will serve and obey him. Everybody across earth will serve and obey him. And that's the last bell. So we can't finish this. Just real quick, remember the interpretation? This dream, you had the pieces. The only one we really know is that God's kingdom is the last one. Thank you.